from Swarthmore College.
From Swarthmore College,
this is...
This is...
This is...
This is War News Radio.
I'm Emily Hager.
And I'm Daniel Simmons.
This week on War News Radio, 6 years in.
It was early morning and my father found a letter in our garage. Actually, it's an envelope, and inside the envelope was a letter and a bullet. They demand us to leave our house because they thought we are infidels and they will kill us if they saw us again.
We'll revisit stories from our show on March 20th, when we marked the 6th anniversary of the start of the Iraq War. Throughout the show, we'll bring you reflections from Iraqi civilians who share the moments that have defined the war for them, from the initial invasion through its 6th anniversary.
And we hear the story of a U.S. soldier who served in Iraq in the first months of the war and found himself frustrated by the Army's flawed approach to winning hearts and minds.
Then, two Iraqis share their thoughts on how the war has shaped their country. We hear from two Baghdad residents. And finally, a look at how growing up in a war zone is impacting the way children play in Iraq.
This is War News Radio. We're starting this show by probing the memories of four Iraqis who were at home during the invasion of 2003. They remember the fears and hopes that accompanied the very first days of the war.
Taif Khuder was a student in Nasiriyah at the time, a city that soon became a major American base.
I was with my entire family, father, mother, two sisters.
I was with my entire family, father, mother, two sisters, and my uncle also, and my grandmother, in the same house for 11 days. At that time, I was a student in information technology, so I hadn't my study. Tried to refresh my mind with some IT things. And it's funny, you know, because it's war. But you need to do something to keep yourself busy. That was at night. In the mornings, I would walk to my neighbors and hang out inside the street. Nothing further.
Ahmed was also a student, but in Baghdad. He remembers the messages that were broadcast on Iraqi TV.
I was a student in Baghdad University. And the government ordered to stop public life, so we were just staying at home and watching TV. Actually, there was not satellite allowed to us to see, so we were just watching Iraqi channel running by Saddam's regime. So they always told us, don't worry, we will win and we will make everything is okay, but it was the opposite what happened at that time. I was certain that American will invade all Baghdad, but I thought, as Saddam Hussein said, he will make Baghdad like a grave to American soldiers. I thought he will destroy everything, but he didn't do anything.
Adil al-Sayed was in Basra during the initial invasion. Basra is in the southern part of Iraq, home to many of the country's oil refineries. Much of the early fighting of the war took place there.
The main thing which I remember till now about the tanks, I saw the tanks when the light is red in their direction, they stopped. They stopped in the intersection. When I saw this and the other people, we felt very happy. We feel that there will be a new thing. The bad regime, the bad government, which did not give any attention for any laws. We hope that there will a beginning for a good day covered by the law.
Jamil al-Shahed was also in Basra in 2003.
I live in Harsha city, where the British troops enter Harsha city. My children go and start reception them, make celebration. They meet them with happy faces because they suffer from the former regime.
Al-Shahed says he also saw a darker side of the war's early days, looting.
I see many people entering the government office and the university office, the school office, and all the service office. They're entering it and destroying the furniture, destroying the equipment, and also they steal some equipment. They destroy everything. But they are angry because they suffer from the former regime. They suffer more from the Hungary, they suffer more from the bad treatment, they suffer more from the killing, from the jail, from many things.
That was Jamil El-Shahed in Basra. This is War News Radio. We just heard the stories a few Iraqi civilians remember from the initial invasion. But that history looks a little different from the perspective of American forces who fought their way to Baghdad. Now, the story of one U.S. soldier who found himself in the Sunni Triangle in April of 2003. Madeline Abramowitz reports.
Chuck is a 35-year-old sergeant in the Army National Guard. Back in the 90s, he served a tour in Bosnia. There, he formed a strong bond with his fellow soldiers. When they got home, they went to college together and were best men at each other's weddings. In 2002, Chuck's friends were called to Iraq. He signed up to join them. He said he couldn't bear the thought of being left behind. And he couldn't wait to see Iraq.
Sounds flaky to a whole lot of people, but that's kind of how I was feeling for it. I just wanted to go to the Middle East, the cradle of civilization right there. I was like, Baghdad, wow.
During his year-long rotation, Chuck, who asked us not to use his last name, was attached to the 4th Infantry Division, 1st Brigade. The 4th ID entered Iraq from Kuwait in April 2003, and Chuck rotated between units in the northern cities of Mosul, Beji, and Tikrit. As a sergeant in the Psychological Operations Unit, he spent a lot of time talking to people. He'd go to a village outside the city, often somewhere American troops had never been, and figure out who lived there and what they needed. Through a translator, Chuck would talk to everyone from mayors and imams to shopkeepers and kids on the street. It's a routine he was used to from his civilian job back home.
Yeah, I'm a police officer up in the Cleveland area. I have to credit that job, actually, for I think what I was able to do in Iraq, or you know what I mean? I kind of brought that mentality with me, not so much of a gangbusters kind of storming the beachhead mentality. I'm a patrol cop. You know what I mean? That's what I do. I turn around, talk to people. Some people say, hey, there's some drug dealers going on in here. We're tired of it, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? I cruise around, I talk to people.
The combat troops that Chuck's unit was supporting took a more aggressive approach. They were operating in the violent Sunni Triangle, the northwestern swath of Iraq that was a hotbed of resistance during the first years of the war. It was Chuck's brigade that eventually found and captured Saddam Hussein outside Tikrit. And for the first 9 months of his tour, American troops swarmed the region, searching for Saddam. They treated the local Iraqis roughly, pointing their weapons at people in the street, driving cars off the road, and raiding houses and rounding up all the men. When the army would do night raids, Chuck would be there in his Humvee. His job was to broadcast messages on a loudspeaker, telling the inhabitants what was happening and urging them not to resist. Night after night, he'd sit in his vehicle and watch.
In the houses in Iraq, they'd have a wall surrounding them, and they'd have like a metal door, and then you'd enter there, and then that would be like the yard, and then the actual house itself. And they'd bust down the steel wall there, and then everybody would file in, kind of like you'd probably see, SWAT teams in the States doing it, and then enter and search the place, sometimes detain the males, take them outside is usually what would happen.
After a while, Chuck started feeling uncomfortable with the way Iraqis were being treated. The aggression looked counterproductive.
Yeah, I was disenchanted with how the raids went, though, a lot of times. 3 a.m., taking a family out of a house and putting the father, putting a hood on his head and flex cuffing him and putting him on his knees in front of his family. I'm like, yeah, we just created an enemy there. You know what I mean? And you see that over and over again, and you're like, wow, that's not going to turn out good for us. That guy's sons are going to hate us, and that guy's sons are going to hate us. I started doubting, what exactly is our aim here? Are we just night after night going to kick in doors and piss people off? Is that our strategy?
As the first year of the war progressed, Chuck noticed changes in the way that Iraqis reacted to him and the other Americans. People in the streets and markets were less willing to talk to him, more likely to get angry. Most of the time, when a particular neighborhood suddenly turned cold towards the Americans, it only took a little asking around to figure out why.
Come to find out, maybe there was, you know, maybe somebody got rolled up in a raid or something and that pissed them off, or maybe, you know, a convoy had gone through there and ran some cars off the road, and then, oh, okay, that's why.
But sometimes their anger would take him by surprise. In November, CBS's Kimberly Dozier came to interview Chuck in a marketplace that he knew well. The people there had always been indifferent towards him, or cool at worst. But with the cameras on them, they showed another side.
All of a sudden, they were chanting behind us, fists raised, and seemed very angry. It could have also been because playing it up for, there's a TV camera, you know. But I remember it kind of took me by surprise because I was, you know, I've been here a bunch of times and this has never happened before.
It took until the end of 2006, when Chuck was back in the States, for the U.S. military to change its approach. American troops ran fewer night raids, took prisoners more selectively, and concentrated on winning the trust of Iraqi civilians. Chuck kept in touch with his friends who stayed in Iraq, and he says the change they saw was dramatic.
A lot of the attitude when I was in Iraq was, screw it, we're here, we have the biggest guns, and, you know, this is our yard and we're going to run it how we want. That was kind of the prevailing mentality when I was there. Watching it a couple years later, it was almost like a different war, you know, and I had a couple friends that had come back, you know what I mean, that come back, and the disparity between, like, my tour and theirs was, it was pretty great.
Now Chuck is on tour in Afghanistan, where he's managing the distribution of humanitarian aid. He says the strategy there seems a lot closer to the hearts and minds tactics the military is using in Iraq right now. And he feels a lot more at ease.
It is night and day compared to Iraq. We're more cognizant of subtleties and nuances and you know, people's perceptions of us and things of that nature a lot more. I feel a lot better. I don't have the heartburn here that I did back then.
As the United States military shifts attention from Iraq to Afghanistan after 6 years, Chuck's story suggests that our success, or failure, may depend as much on how we deal with Afghan civilians as on the number of troops we put there. As for Chuck, he's looking forward to returning home in a year and taking his 4-year-old to Disneyland. For War News Radio, I'm Madeline Abramowitz.
This is War News Radio. By 2006, the security situation in Iraq was rapidly deteriorating. Militias in Baghdad threatened families across the city, creating refugees by the thousands. Ahmed and his father were among those targeted.
It was early morning and my father found a letter in our garage. Actually, it's an envelope, and inside the envelope was a letter and a bullet. They demand us to leave our house because they thought we are infidels and they will kill us if they saw us again. And my father, he decided immediately to collect our things, to leave the house as soon as possible because our neighbor received the same letter and he unfortunately killed because he didn't listen to the threat.
The threats were accompanied by kidnappings, shootings, and other attacks. Taif Khuder, who lives in Nazaria, lost his father to the violence.
In 2006, I lost my father by the terrorists.
In 2006, I lost my father by the terrorists. The terrorists killed my father in the north of Baghdad. He was a driver of a big trailer, and he was traveling to the north. And they interrupt the road and they kill him. So after that, I am forced to take the lead of the family and take care of them and make them survive.
That was Taif Khuder in Nazaria.
This is War News Radio. For many Americans, the Iraq War has been a story of bleak headlines and shifting policy, but they tend to take a wide-angle view of the conflict. For Iraqis, the experience has been much more immediate. Hansi Lo Wong and Emily Hager spoke to two Iraqis living in Baghdad about how they see the last 6 years and the changes the war has brought. Here's Hansi.
Iyad Salman has lived through three wars: the Iran-Iraq War of the 1980s, the Gulf War of the early 1990s, and now the Iraq War. But the current conflict, he says, stands out.
This one, the last war, it is very different. Everybody felt it. Everybody was hurt. The true face of Iraq has been changed a lot.
During the 2003 invasion, Salman, an English translator, was in Baghdad, watching television at home to the sounds of bombing outside. He says it's hard to process what's happened to his country over the past 6 years.
We consider ourselves to be the victims of this war. I think I will not see my country regain its real aspects, its real face, its real position in the world, and neither will my children. That is why I am sad.
6 years of war has transformed Iraqi society. Iyad Salman remembers growing up in a much more peaceful Iraq during the 1970s. Now, the war dominates life in his hometown of Baghdad, where even everyday conversations, he says, often revolve around the violence.
It is strange. Iraqis have never been like that. As far as I remember, we used to talk about culture, history, society, politics, even during the period of Saddam. But now everybody, you know, is talking about the killings, the violence, and they deal with it very normally.
Raya Al-Naqshbandi also lives in Baghdad, where she teaches English drama at Baghdad University. The war has taken its toll on her and her family. She says that each time she drives to campus, she worries that a bomb might go off on her way to work. It's happened before.
My nephew, he was 30 years old, and because of the bombing, the glass of the windows in their house broke. So he went to the market to buy some to replace the broken ones. When he entered their street, he was stopped by another car, and two men came out of this car, and they shot him inside his car, in front of his house. They shot him to death.
Al-Naqshbandi has also lost her only brother, who was killed in a market bombing on his way to buy a cell phone card.
So how can I forget, or how can I accept life now without so many dear people that we have lost? It's not only a matter that touches me, but in every Iraqi house, you'll find that they have lost somebody who is there because of this mess that came about after the war.
Iyad Salman echoes that sentiment. And even for those who escape physical injury, he says, the emotional toll of the war cuts deep.
Today, maybe you will feel sad, oh, four people were dead. You will hear this news every day, whenever you are drinking coffee, whenever you are taking your breakfast or having lunch. This will affect everybody's personality and change them or weaken the spiritual thing in them. That is why I say this war is different, because everybody was a victim in it, even the killers.
Amidst the grief and exhaustion of war, life goes on. Salman is a new father of two young sons. He hopes his children will get a good education and grow up in peace. He hopes, he says.
But actually, I don't believe in this. That is why not only me, maybe 50 or 60% of Iraqis they hope, they wish they can leave Iraq and go to raise their children somewhere else.
Although Salman wanted to get married and start a family in the years before the war, he was nervous about raising children under the Ba'ath regime.
I didn't want them to learn the values of Saddam's party. I used to say that they were bad values. I didn't know that fate is hiding something worse for me and for my son.
Eyad Salman's worries won't be captured in the major news headlines or referenced in the debates over the war budget. His and Raya al-Naqshbandi's fears represent smaller, more personal threads in the story of the past 6 years, a history of the war as seen by the people who have lived it. With Emily Hager, I'm Hansi Lo Wong for War News Radio.
This is War News Radio. Over the past 6 years, a young generation of Iraqis have grown up in the midst of conflict. UNICEF cites psychological trauma as one of the critical issues facing children in Iraq, and Iraqi parents are struggling to support the youngest victims of the war. Anna Schechtman examines how violence in the streets is shaping young minds and the games children are playing.
Hamoudi al-Sharbaf is a fifth grader in Baghdad. For more than half of his life, he's lived in a war zone. Like many Iraqi kids, Hamoudi has taken to playing with toy guns, mimicking the warfare around him. In the midst of real combat between American soldiers and Iraqi insurgents, Hamoudi and his friends stage mock battles in Baghdad streets.
In our neighborhood, every feast, the children go out and buy pistols, machine guns, sniper rifles, and grenade launchers. Some of those, God forbid, fire bullets that could actually hurt you. And the boys from one street attack the boys on the other streets.
Hamoudi's mother, Azar al-Sharbaf, was stunned by her son's encyclopedic knowledge of guns and explosives.
I felt so bad when he was listing the names of the toy guns. I don't know these weapons. What the hell is a grenade launcher?
She remembers when her son first brought home a toy machine gun that he had bought with his own savings.
I asked him what it was. He told me, "Do you know how much this thing costs? It dried all my savings. This is a machine gun." He took it and hid it under his pillow. I asked him why he was doing this. He said, "Just in case somebody attacks us, I would defend you with this gun. Don't worry about it. Leave it under my pillow." Another time, he brought a pistol. It was so hard to tell if it was real or fake.
Hamoudi is not alone. Violence is weighing on the minds of many Iraqi children. Sharbaf explains.
I was listening to two kids in the fifth grade, and their language was, "I killed this guy, I destroyed this guy." What are you talking about? Why do you destroy? This generation is all about killing and destroying.
Dr. Haider al-Maliki agrees. A psychiatrist working in Iraq's only hospital ward for children suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, he worries about the effect that toy guns have on the mental stability of Iraqi kids.
The usual toys is the guns, even in the school, even in the streets. So this is another cause of social and educational deterioration of our children during the last 5 years. If we raised our children to play with these toys and play with the guns, And this is not good for their future. And we think in the next few years, most of our generation will have a very violent mind. So we try to prevent these toys to have a good generation. Generation talk about the peace, not a violent-minded.
Dr. Maliki realizes that reducing the number of toy guns in Iraq will need to be a group effort, requiring families, schools, and the government to intervene.
We now try with education for the parents, education for the families and for the school, especially for the teacher, about these toys. And we now try to use the some of the medias in Iraq to educate the people about the risk of these toys. We need the help of the government. There must be some laws to prevent these toys.
For now, Sherbaf is on her own and trying to protect her son from the violence around him. But she knows there's only so much she can do.
Violence runs through our blood. He is my son, but I really can't erase the guns from his mind. His friends have a bigger influence over him than I do.
Dr. Maliki says that two-thirds of Iraq's children suffer from psychological trauma. Growing up in a war-torn country, Iraqi kids have experienced violence as the norm. So while games like Cops and Robbers are escapes from reality for American kids, for Hamoudi and his friends, they are all too real. For War News Radio, I'm Anna Sheckman.
This is War News Radio. On the 6th anniversary of the American invasion of Iraq, we asked Ahmed and Taif Huder to reflect on how the war has changed their lives over the past 6 years. Taif Huder, the Iraqi from Nasiriya whose father was killed in Baghdad in 2006, describes how the conflict has continued to affect his community.
In 2007 and 2008 also.
We did have the militias in the south, especially in Basra, and they ruled. They ruled the life inside of Basra. So I lost 6 of my friends, each one of them after the other. 1 month, 2 months, and another would be killed. So I lost them because of the militias. They were interpreters. They worked with development organizations or the U.S. companies, so the militias would assassinate them. This was a turning point in my life also, because I learned that I also need to take care of their families, not by money, but by asking them if you need this, if you need that.
Ahmed was a student at Baghdad University during the U.S. invasion. We asked him, 6 years later, if he thought the war was worth it. He said the answer was complicated.
Now I am free to do many things. This is the biggest change in Saddam's period. I cannot speak, not allowed to think about my future. Now I can speak, I can talk about corruption in Iraqi government. I can do anything. But unfortunately, Iraq is still in chaos. This is really hard.
That's our show for this week.
War News Radio is a production of Swarthmore College.
Visit us online to listen to archive shows, learn more about the program, or subscribe to our podcast. That's at warnewsradio.org.
On our site, you can also comment on this show or on our past programs.
Our behind-the-scenes crew includes Samia Abbas, Louis Katz, and Abdullah Mazian. I'm Emily Hager.
And I'm Daniel Simmons. Until next time, thanks for listening.